I don't know if you saw this, but there's an interview with Dick Cheney's lovely wife, Lon Cheney.
What I have to talk about is the big lie of the family values debate. The idea that marriage has ever been some solid, static, immovable thing.
In 1967, the United States Supreme Court ruled that all Americans have a fundamental right to marry.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. The Anglican Report on its queer rift gets global regrets, the other Clinton quips political, and untangling the history of tying the knot. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm John Beaupre.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending October 23, 2004. An Anglican Church Commission convened to find ways to maintain unity in the 78 million member global communion despite its rift over gay and lesbian issues published its report this week after a year of study. The report represented what was called the highest level of consensus that could be reached by the international panel's 17 members, who endorsed it unanimously. Primarily, it called for continued dialogue and proposed development of a basic covenant defining the authority and relationships of the church's regional bodies, known as provinces. Both are long-term processes, so any real impact of the non-binding recommendations could be years away rather than immediate. The controversy the commission hoped to ease was ignited by two events: the 2002 decision by Canada's New Westminster Diocese to offer church blessings to same-gender couples, and last year's consecration by the Episcopal Church USA of openly partnered gay Gene Robinson as Bishop of New Hampshire. The report was critical of both actions for the offense they caused to much of the rest of the global church and called for the bishops involved to tender their regrets. Bishops unwilling to do so were urged to reconsider their participation in activities of the global church. The report called for moratoria on both public blessings of gay and lesbian couples and on the consecration of other bishops with same-gender partners, those moratoria to last until some new consensus is reached. But it also ordered a halt to foreign bishops' efforts to assume guidance of conservative parishes in the U.S. and Canada, saying those parishes should turn to more compatible retired bishops within their own dioceses. It further criticized the intemperate language of the most vocal opponents of gay and lesbian equality within the church, declaring that any demonizing of homosexual persons or their ill treatment is totally against Christian charity. Commission Chair Archbishop Robin Eames of Ireland underscored the point as he announced the report, saying, "There is absolutely no room for homophobia in the life of the church."
Liberals within the church were relieved that the commission did not take harsher measures. Many focused on its nuanced language. New Westminster Bishop Michael Ingham and U.S. Primate Frank Griswold both distinguished between regrets, which they readily expressed, and apologies, which neither tendered. Griswold said, "We regret how difficult and painful actions of our church have been in many provinces of our communion, and the negative repercussions that have been felt by brother and sister Anglicans. Given the emphasis of the report on difficulties presented by our differing understandings of homosexuality, as presiding bishop, I am obliged to affirm the presence and positive contribution of gay and lesbian persons to every aspect of our church in all orders of ministry. Other provinces are also blessed by the lives and ministry of homosexual persons. I regret that there are places within our communion where it is unsafe for them to speak out the truth of who they are." Ingham said, "I don't wish to apologize for the actions themselves because I think they were right, but I understand that change is difficult and some people have been alienated, and I regret that very much." Ingham said he could not stop the blessings for couples because that decision belongs to the New Westminster Synod, which will be meeting in May. The entire Canadian church was also rebuked for having adopted a resolution honoring the integrity of same-gender relationships, but the National Synod won't be meeting to discuss the report until 2008.
Robinson himself took heart that the report referred to a moratorium rather than an outright ban, since a moratorium is something that comes to an end. The report aimed its comments not at him personally, but at the bishops involved in his consecration. In fact, the commission had repeatedly refused his request to speak to them, nor was any representative of his diocese among the many people whose testimony it heard. Robinson affirmed that he has no intention of stepping down and that he plans to attend the Global Lambeth Conference of Bishops in 2008. He said, "Gay and lesbian people will take much comfort from parts of this report while continuing to unfortunately have to fight for our rightful place in the church. It is true that until these issues are resolved, gay and lesbian people in the church are second-class members, and that injustice is never going to be all right. But the reason you're hearing us be positive is that I think everyone believes we are inexorably moving forward on this issue." But Robinson was saddened that the report emphasized the pain of conservatives without once referring to the pain gays and lesbians have suffered at the hands of the church. And he wished that the report's reference to his consecration as widely unacceptable had been matched by a statement of the unacceptability of the Archbishop of Nigeria's statements that gays are lower than dogs and that Robinson's consecration represented a satanic attack on the church.
The primate of Nigeria himself, Archbishop Peter Akinola, saw the report very differently. He declared, "Where is the language of rebuke for those who are promoting sexual sins as holy and acceptable behavior? The imbalance is bewildering. It is wrong to use equal language for unequal actions." Nigeria has more Anglicans than any province outside of England, and Akinola has been the most vocal critic of gay and lesbian equality within the church. As for his own efforts to claim pastoral authority over conservative parishes in the U.S., he said, "We have been asked to express regret for our actions and affirm our desire to remain in the communion. How patronizing. We will not be intimidated." Another anti-gay leader, South American primate Greg Venables, scoffed at the North American regrets, saying, "They've already said they're sorry for the pain they caused. That's like an adulterous husband saying to his wife, 'I'm sorry I've hurt you.' It doesn't deal with the underlying problem." Conservative Anglican activists in many nations were disappointed at the report's leniency toward the North Americans and dismissed it as toothless. But a number of major figures in the church, including the Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams, believe the report's recommendations offer hope that the 400-year-old global church won't fall apart over gay and lesbian issues.
Briefly, in other news, the first legal marriage in the Canadian province of Nova Scotia was celebrated this week with the wedding in Amherst of Gerald Veldhoven and Norman Carter after 30 years together. The wedding followed a ruling by Nova Scotia's Supreme Court last month that made it Canada's sixth regional authority to open marriage to same-gender couples. Earlier this month, two couples filed a lawsuit in Saskatchewan in hopes of winning a similar decision.
Hong Kong saw its first-ever pride parade last week, as some 40 lesbi gays and transgenders marched before about 200 spectators. The first attempt to organize a march there came in 1992, when homosexual acts were decriminalized, but it met an unfavorable response.
Openly lesbian U.S. rock music star Melissa Etheridge is back home and recovering well from two successful surgeries for breast cancer. She'll be undergoing chemotherapy, but expects to be working again in a few months.
Openly gay 1980s pop singer Mark Almond is in stable condition following a serious traffic accident. He is best known for his work with Soft Cell, particularly on the hit Tainted Love, but he's also been a longtime advocate for gay and lesbian equality.
On a sadder note, African-American lesbian feminist activist and poet Margaret Sloan Hunter has died at age 57 after a long illness. In addition to her decades of civil rights activism, she was formerly an editor of Ms. Magazine.
Another loss to the community was the death of Brazilian Paulo Henrique Longo at age 40 from a heart attack. He was a longtime advocate for gay and lesbian equality in Brazil and was also active internationally on AIDS issues and the human rights of sex workers, including the founding of the Network of Sex Work Projects.
And finally, open gay Briton Alan Hollinghurst's novel, The Line of Beauty, this week became the first gay-themed work ever to win the Man Booker Prize. The 36-year-old Booker is widely considered to be the world's most prestigious English-language literary award, although only books from the UK, the British Commonwealth, and Ireland qualify. It's certainly one of the richest prizes at £50,000. Hollinghurst came close to the honor a decade ago when his gay-themed novel, The Folding Star, was a finalist. The Line of Beauty centers on a young gay man whose friend's father is a leading conservative member of parliament, so it both follows the hero's sexual adventures in the early years of the AIDS epidemic and satirizes UK politics under Tory Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher. In its most talked-about scene, the hero dances with Thatcher herself at a party, and he's high on cocaine at the time. Although the judges were sharply divided among the finalists, Booker panel chair and openly gay Labour MP Chris Smith said the winner's gay focus was never an issue in their debates. He told reporters, "This is a novel that happens to be about gay sex and gay relationships. The fact it can be considered as a perfectly valid part of contemporary fiction without regarding that as unique shows how much times have changed."
That's News Wrap for the week ending October 23rd, 2004, written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm John Beaupre.
You'll discover some fascinating facts about the laws of marriage from an acclaimed documentary later in the program.
Once I had a secret love, it lived within the heart of me. All too soon, my secret love became to be free.
The women who embraced in the wagon were Adam and Eve crossing a dark cathedral stage. No, Eve and Eve loving one another as they would not be able to once they ate of the fruit and knew themselves as they truly were. She felt curiously moved, curiously envious of them. She had never to this moment thought Eden a particularly attractive paradise, based as it was on naivete. But she saw that the women in the cart had a passionate, loving intimacy forever closed to her. How strong it made them, what comfort it gave. The young woman was heavily powdered, but quite attractive, a curvesome creature, rounded at bosom and cheek. When she smiled, even her teeth seemed puffed and rounded like tiny ivory pillows. Let us go away together, away from the anger and imperatives of men. We shall find ourselves a secluded bower where they dare not venture. There will be only the two of us, and we shall linger through long afternoons of sweet retirement. In the evenings I shall read to you while you work your cross-stitch in the firelight. And then we shall go to bed, my dearest girl. You've been listening to an excerpt from Sisters, a 1981 novel by Lynn, mother of Mary and wife of U.S. Vice President Dick Cheney.
The Marrying Kind is the seventh CD from lesbian feminist humorist Kate Clinton, and it couldn't have come at a better time. Why is she called one of America's sharpest, edgiest, and most irreverent comics? Just listen to this excerpt as she turns her wit on sodomy, sadami, and the Cheneys.
On the way over to the show tonight, I heard on Fox News, so it must be true. Yeah, I heard that Dick Cheney, and in our house we call him the Bush Whisperer, I know, people say to me, don't make fun of Dick Cheney, he's got a gay daughter. Oh, really? Well, there's something about Mary, apparently. Here's the weird thing, though. He's got a gay daughter, but his wife does not. No, I don't know if you saw this, but there's an interview with Dick Cheney's lovely wife, Lon Cheney, and she's scary. And they said to her, so now you've got a lesbian daughter, and she recently came out, and Lon Chaney was like, ah, she did no such thing. Scary. She's very scary. But Dick announced from a secure, undisclosed location, also known as intensive care, well, you know he had a defibrillator put in, and he is fibbing better. Honey, fire up the microwave. Dick's coming over for dinner. Okay. Just another little announcement, and that is I will be doing the whole show tonight in real time. Okay, because people have TiVo now, and they have no clue what real time actually is. All summer long, everybody was recording that The Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. Did you do that? But, and you know, it's a great show, but, you know, I just like to point out that it took 5 gay men to replace Martha Stewart. So the whole point of Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, as you know, is these gay men invade a home, and they take these really schlubby straight guys who have horrible, hideous personal habits. They're gross. And they get them ready so that they can get the gal. Now, I think that's wrong. I think we should keep it in the family, don't you think? And it should be Queer Eye for the Lesbian Guy, and just help the gals get the gals. And now here's another thing. I don't know if you know this, but now Absolut Vodka is sponsoring gay events. Did you know that? Yeah. Very exciting. It's called Absolut Out. But Absolut Out, I think, gives the wrong idea to people. I mean, you think you come out and you should get a year's supply of vodka. That would be Absolut Blackout. Well, God, I think I came out to my family last night. No one's talking to me. And they're shunning me. They're shunning me. I must have done... Although, I don't know about you, but I sort of like it when my family shunned me. Didn't you? I had more time. Oh, my God. Now they like to come and visit. Oy, please. And we've got lots of sponsorship now. We've gone from being a gay movement now to being a gay market, apparently. Amazing. And we've even got our own little brand now, that little... equal sign thing. You know, it's cool, but I think, you know, just for a couple of years, I wish we had done the better than sign. Don't you think? Just kind of fun. But gosh, we're getting product endorsement now. I mean, what is next? Motrin sponsors the Michigan Women's Music Festival. It could happen. Or Xanax and Ambien sponsor the circuit parties. Actually, I guess they already are. These guys come and they all have the same kind of body. Have you ever noticed that sort of over-pectoralized gay men? I mean, they look like little Cornish gay men. And their arms are so short. You just worry they're not going to get the food to their mouths. You know, you just want to give them longer utensils and help them out. So, and here's another one. Preparation H sponsoring the sodomy celebrations. You are a tender little crowd, aren't you? Well, that was a lot to celebrate, though, don't you think? That decision this summer, Lawrence versus Texas, you know? Fabulous. Amazing. Apparently, while old Juggernaut George was trying to strike down Saddam, the Supremes were striking down sodomy. Yes. And at least they got the job done.
That was lesbian fumerist Kate Clinton from her recently released CD, The Marrying Kind. For more information, check out www.kateclinton.com.
Visibility is the key to success of the lesbian and gay movements for civil rights protection. Hi, I'm Urvashi Vaid, inviting you to listen to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine, one of our most visible and articulate voices for our lesbian and gay community.
The quest for marriage equality involves both a profoundly human phenomenon and a powerful social institution. Jim DeSeb's critically acclaimed documentary, Tying the Knot, beautifully covers both. Part one of this special two-part feature, produced by Steve Pride, spotlighted the film's portraits of a lesbian and a gay man who suffered unjust treatment after the tragic deaths of their long-term spouses. In this week's conclusion, we follow DeSeb through the halls of academia to the corridors of the U.S. Congress to learn how the legal rights of all couples became so, well, tied up in knots.
Wicked sodomites, reads Romans chapter 1, it's an abomination unto God. He created you male and female, the Bible says. Male and female. Not homosexual, not bisexual, not anything but heterosexual. But you heterophobes don't like that because you don't want to listen.
I'm straight! We're both straight!
My name is Jim DeSeb. I'm the director of a new film called Tying the Knot. If you're a reader, there's a great book called What is Marriage For? By E.J. Graff, who's an historian that speaks in the film. And her book was so eye-opening to me. You know, as I got into making Tying the Knot and looking at the issues of marriage, I kept finding myself being susceptible to the right-wing rhetoric. I was watching all the right-wing rhetoric from the congressional debates on the Defense of Marriage Act in 1996. And I found myself sitting there saying, well, they're making reasonable arguments. Why should marriage be different than a man and a woman if it's always been that way? You know, why do we want to alter the status quo? There's a section of the film where EJ starts talking about the history of marriage. And it's such an eye-opener because you start understanding that marriage is a really flexible institution and that it's changed throughout history.
What I have to talk about is the big lie of the family values debate. The idea that marriage has ever been some solid, static, immovable thing, that and that it has stayed that way for 6,000 years. In fact, marriage has constantly been a political battleground, constantly shifting to suit each culture and class, each era and economy. For the first 1,000 years of Christianity, it considered marriage a secular institution, and not until 1215 did the Catholic Church declare marriage a sacrament. Traditionally, the engagement feast was when you signed, witnessed, and notarized the marriage contract, and the marriage ceremony was when you actually exchanged property, right? This is back in an era when there are only two ways of making a living, land and labor, right? So either if your family has property, they find another family with whom to exchange it, or if you're from the class of butchers and bakers and candlestick makers, then you find someone else who will be your business partner lifelong. So a farmer required a farm wife. You couldn't bring in the eggs otherwise. A fisherman required a fish wife. You couldn't get the goods to market.
So she sort of tracks this departure from the agrarian society into a modern industrial society and the rise of capitalism and how that affects marriage. Because now we look at marriage as being based in love. And if you ask most people, what is marriage about? Or what do you need to have a good marriage? You need commitment. You need love. Those are the two main answers, because that's what we believe now. And how do you argue that if you have a gay or lesbian couple who's in love, that they should be denied from all the rights and benefits and social recognition of marriage?
What?
Who's the woman you're sleeping with, son?
What?
I'm his wife.
Not here, you ain't.
Evan Wolfson from Freedom to Marry presents a great piece in the film about interracial marriage. There's an amazing couple in the 1950s, a black woman named Mildred Jeter and a white man named Richard Loving who lived in a rural part of Virginia. And they fell in love and they wanted to get married. And in that part of Carolina County in Virginia, it was illegal for two people of different races to marry. As strange as that sounds today. So they went off to Washington, D.C. and got married. They went back to their little county, didn't really talk about it much, but word got out. There was a celebration with their families, and word got out. The sheriff showed up one night, middle of the night, woke them up, pulled them from their beds, and arrested them for marrying illegally, for marrying the wrong kind of person.
On the count of miscegenation, I find defendant Richard Perry Lovin and defendant Mildred Dolores Jeter guilty as charged.
And they were given a choice of an exile of 25 years or spending a year in prison and divorcing. So they left. They moved to Washington, D.C., got a lawyer and challenged this. And ultimately, the United States Supreme Court said that, well, no, they should be allowed to marry. And it overturned all the anti-marriage laws between races, anti-miscegenation laws in this country. So we draw a parallel between that and what's going on in marriage now with gay and lesbian couples. And there's a really nice, Constance Rogers, who's one of the editors on the project, does this really nice editing job of cutting between Evan, who is speaking about the arguments that the lawyers in the Loving versus Virginia case were making, and the debates that the debate that Bob Barr and James Talent and other of these creeps in Congress in 1996 were making. I think it's a really powerful parallel. There really is no difference. And it's one of my favorite parts of the film. It's really, really cool. Evan Wolfson from Freedom to Marry.
They argued that if we allowed interracial couples to marry, society would fall apart.
If marriage goes, then the family goes. And if the family goes, we have none of the decency or ordered liberty which Americans have been brought up to enjoy and to appreciate.
The definition of marriage itself meant that this couple could not possibly be married.
Marriage does not mean two men or two women getting married. It just doesn't mean that.
They argued that it would be bad for the children.
Should we tell the children of America that in the eyes of the law, the parties to a homosexual union are entitled to all the rights and privileges and benefits that have always been reserved for a man and a woman united in marriage?
They argued that it would be unfair to different states that didn't want to allow these kinds of couples to marry.
No one state of the union can have its decision of its people overridden, run roughshod by people from another state.
They made very much the same kinds of arguments that we hear today made to defend sex discrimination in marriage. But fortunately, in 1967, unlike in previous cases, the United States Supreme Court had had enough. And the court ruled that all Americans have a fundamental right to marry, that it is a basic human right, a basic freedom. And the court struck that ban down.
Why ride in the back of the bus? Why drink from a different water fountain? Civil unions are a step in the right direction. They only exist in one state. They were an answer to a state that was not willing to open up marriage to us. It's not a panacea. It has no federal implications. We still have the Defense of Marriage Act. It's a step in the right direction. And as Evan Wolfson said to me once, we only have civil unions because we asked for marriage. Had we asked for civil unions or domestic partnership, we would have less. And we will always get less than we ask for until we have the big breakthroughs, which we're starting to get now. So, you know, civil unions are, it's a second class status. It does, or it purports to do exactly what marriage does. But it puts us in a different line at the city clerk's office, and I see no reason for that.
Hello, I'm Steve Pride, and you've been listening to part two of a two-part visit with director Jim DeSev. His film, Tying the Knot, is currently in release throughout the United States. More info can be found online at www.1049films.com. Thanks for listening.
Why do straight folks have such lavish weddings when so many end up in divorce? Meanwhile, we're excluded from such lavish settings, except to decorate and do their hair, of course. Something old, something new, something borrowed, something blue.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, John Beaupre, Graham Underhill, Rex Walkner, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Thanks also to J.D. Doyle, Michelle Carlsberg, and Kate Clinton. K.D. Lang and the Therapy Sisters performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime, online, exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, www.thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded through direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you so very much. Only our listeners can keep this program on the air and get some queer history, music, and culture on specially produced CDs. For all the details, please do log on to thiswayout.org or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on 2BAY Byron Bay, New South Wales, KHSU, Arcata, California, WYEP, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. And we know you'll stay tuned.